This is Agri Futures on Air, brought to you by Agri Futures Australia, driving innovation in Australian agriculture.
Hello, and welcome to Agri Futures on Air. I'm Jane Cudahy. The Agri Futures Rural Women's Award provides a platform to showcase projects which will have a positive impact on Australian rural industries and communities. With seven national finalists, the 2022 cohort are involved in everything from food security and health services for some of Australia's most vulnerable, to helping people access fitness programs and communication initiatives highlighting the impact of rural women. The Rural Women's Award is one of many AgriFutures Australia initiatives, ensuring our rural industries prosper now and into the future. We need to thank Westpac, the platinum sponsor of the award, who will provide each finalist with a $15,000 Westpac grant for their project, business or program, access to professional development opportunities and alumni networks. In this episode, we're hearing from South Australian winner Robin Verral. Food insecurity is more than just a concept for Robin. She knows firsthand the unease of stretching budgets to afford the weekly grocery shop from her time as a young single mum. Now, Robin and her husband Chris are passionate about creating and sustaining regional communities through sustainable agriculture and connecting consumers with farmers.
I was born in South Australia. My father was the first computer programmer in Australia, so we spent a lot of our childhood in Mossman in Queensland because the sugarcane mills were the first ones to be computerised.
Really? You've just blown my mind with that even. How interesting.
His computer is still in the Cairns Museum today.
Really?
Yep. Go on to the Cairns Museum and Frank Beryl's computer is there. That's my dad.
Right. Well, that's next time I'm up there, I will definitely do that. How interesting. So South Australia to Mossman in North Queensland. Yep. What do you remember about that?
Remember, I'm a twin, identical twin, and I had an older brother. And while we were there, we gained another sister. So... I remember they built my mum and dad a house because dad was an executive. So they had one of the first brick homes, Mount Gambier Stone, in Mossman in Queensland. And we used to play with the truck drivers and my brother used to be able to tell time from when the truck drivers were coming and going. But one thing we did get at the ages of 3, 4, 5 and 6 was potty mouths from how the truck drivers spoke.
Oh, so, yes.
Yeah. So we came back to South Australia because Clark Shoes was the next industry and Dad then just floated around into various industries where they needed computerisation. And we moved to Secret Park in South Australia and wound up going to a Catholic school. In this time, I had gained another two younger brothers, so there were 6 of us.
Wow.
Yes.
Your mother is an amazing woman, being moved around everywhere with all of these children.
And she's amazing. She's amazing. She's my total inspiration. She was a kindergarten teacher, and she went back to university while all of us were at school, so she studied at night to upgrade her qualifications and became kindergarten director and special needs educator.
Wow, what a woman.
She is an amazing woman. They're both still alive today. I'm very lucky.
Okay, so what did you, when you finished school, what did you want to do? Did you want to do more study or did you go out into the workforce? How did your career start?
When we were in Mossman, I have a picture of me and my twin sister, all I ever wanted to be was a nurse.
Oh.
So I have a picture of me at 4 and a half wearing a nurse's costume. Mm-hmm. So that was my sole goal through school. I had a year off after I finished my year 12 and did some work around the place that ended up following where my passion was. I spent the next 10, 15 years studying to get a bachelor in nursing and I was mainly an operating theatre nurse. And then I had my daughter during this time. So I moved out of nursing and into medical sales because it was a more financial career for me.
Okay, so it was finance that drove that decision more so than a great desire to leave nursing.
It was finance, purely finance, yep.
You know, we're talking to you as an AgriFutures Rural Woman of the Year with a lot of your work in food security, and part of that comes, well, inspiration for that comes from this period of your life where finance was an issue. You're a single mum. Am I correct there before I go too much further?
Yes, you're very correct,
So you're a single mum in that period, money's tight. Can you just really describe what that food insecurity meant to you at that time, so we can put it into context for a bit further down the conversation?
Yep, I had a really great job. There's nothing about nursing that's not financially secure, and there's nothing about being a medical sales rep that's not financially secure. But during this time, once you're paying school fees and your children are growing up, it really became an issue of I just couldn't. Pride's an interesting thing, and I have such a supportive, wonderful family. They're all quite shocked that I was actually going through this and not being able to tell them.
So that's what you did at the time? You soldiered on your own, you didn't include them?
Didn't include them. I would turn up to my parents once a week for dinner, but we would all do that. And during this time, I also had three younger siblings still at school, so I didn't want to ask my parents for financial help. So there were times that spaghetti bolognese was 10 nights in a row, or I would skip a meal just because it was just easier to be able to put food in lunchboxes and in front of my daughter and just start eating at work rather than admit that it was a struggle.
What do they say now when they have, you know, hindsight is an amazing thing, when you describe this period to them, what's that like?
It's very confronting for them in the fact that, you know, they didn't realise, but my older siblings, well, my twin sister and older brother were starting families of their own. And it was just not something that they just didn't think of. So for them, it is, like I say, it's quite confronting for all of my siblings. And even now my nieces and nephews are quite shocked that that is exactly what goes on in middle suburbia, yes. Middle-class suburbia.
Yes, and I think that's quite fair. When do you regret that now? Now that you have you're older and you've got a bit of security and maybe you know, you see how it affects people around you. Would you change that, do you think, if you had your time again?
I would. I would, and I think any person that's been food insecure would look back and go, I just wish that I could do something different. You know, there weren't the food charities that are out there today. There weren't options. There just weren't options. So it's something that I would definitely look back on and think, perhaps, yep, if I did it different. But then I don't know that the outcome would be different because my daughter's a very happy, stable, married woman with a child and another one on the way, and I'm now in a happy, stable relationship, and it was quite a short period of my life, but it felt like the longest year of my life. Mm.
No, I can understand that. And as I said, hindsight's a lovely thing and we're doing pie in the sky kind of scenarios, but that was your reality at the time. So, you know, as you say, you are in a happy, secure relationship now. Tell me about that. How did you get involved with the farm and meet your husband, Chris?
We actually went to school together.
Oh, so he was there the whole time.
Oh, yeah, he was right in front of me. But I was at school. I was never going to marry anybody from the country because that meant that, you know, you had to go and live in the country. Mm. So, you know, that was my unconscious bias at the time. And I really just wanted to be nursing and, you know, perhaps marry a doctor and all that sort of stereotypical dreams that one is given from my era. And having travelled a lot with my medical repping job, well, I was the main instigator of organising our 20-year high school reunion. I got a group of mates together and said, let's do this. And the easiest people to find are boarders. And my husband was a boarder because 9 out of 10 of them, their parents haven't moved, never alone them.
You can track them down.
can track them down.
Call them on their landlines and it's still in the phone book.
That's exactly what it was.
I was a boarder, I can relate to that.
And they don't move very far, if not certainly their parents are there. So he got, and I did a in a form letter and send it out, because there were 260 boys in my year 12 and 60 girls.
Goodness, where did you go to school?
We were the first of the girls to go through Sacred Heart College at Somerton Park.
Oh, right.
So they changed from an all-boys school to actually inviting the girls in.
Well, so, yes, that's just a massive year. So you've tracked Chris down through a form letter.
Yep. And so he rang me up one day and said, do you want to meet and go out on a date? And I'm like, oh, I don't think that I do, but
After all that work, she's reluctant.
there were half a dozen of them that had contacted me to say, yes, great, let's do this reunion. And so we did meet up with a day, and I had broken my wrist about a week before that. And so when we went out, I had to actually ask him to cut up my food.
Are you preparing for old age? That's fine.
and he was looking at me because I was determined not to ask. And then he said, would you like me to cut up your food? And I'm like, oh, yes, please.
You should have ordered this soup. What were you thinking?
I know. Oh, no, I'd ordered a taco, and I still couldn't cut up my food. So by the time the reunion came around, we were seeing each other. So So we went from there. And when I first drove out to the farm, which was a while, he took me for a drive through the farm, and I didn't realise how big it was, and nor did I have any orientation or bearing as to where we were going versus where the house was. And we got to a paddock, and he's like, oh, middle of winter, probably shouldn't drive through here. I normally bog the ute. So, and I'm like, well, don't, because I've just come from work, and I was in a suit, and I was a little bit cold, and I was thinking, why is he driving me around the farm when it's freezing?
Well, yeah. There's a perfectly good fireplace back at the house.
And, you know, four dogs on the back of the ute, because the dogs come everywhere and still do. And, of course, he bogs it to its axle, right up to almost the door. And he said, oh, I won't explain expletive. I'm just going to walk back to the farmhouse and get the tractor, and I'll have to pull you out by that. Well, it was, you know, around about 5 o'clock, so going on dark. At 9 o'clock that night, I thought he'd left me because it was pitch black.
Gosh.
No phones, it was not even digital phone service in those days. And I sat there thinking, and it was so cold, I got the dogs off the back of the ute because I felt pity for them. So there were, and I couldn't turn the ute on because the battery would go flat. And so there we were at 10 o'clock at night, and there was one light coming towards me, and I thought, oh, my God, someone's come to shoot.
Oh, my goodness, this is a terrible story.
And it was, of course, the tractor light. I didn't realise the house was nearly 9 kilometres from where we were and how slow, and never alone, had to then find the tractor that needed to pull us out and then drive it back, because I didn't realise tractors only go at 30 k's an hour.
Oh, my goodness, what an introduction. And you still stayed?
And I still stayed, hooray, which is crazy.
Did you cook your tea by the time you got home at least?
No, because we hadn't started anything, because he literally had spent all that time walking and getting the tractor.
Oh, so it was toast. Toast. So you ended up staying, and then it would have been a whole other experience just learning the ropes of the farm and food production, and you've got beef and lamb, don't you?
Yes. And from that point, I suddenly realised, if we were to stay together, because I still hadn't decided. I'm just calling him a potential boyfriend for a while. that I needed to learn how to drive every single piece of machinery on the farm. When I realised that he was working solo, when I came up on weekends, we would work together. And at that stage, we were planting 1,500 to 3,000 trees every year for, you know, shelter belts, greening, all those sorts of things that we were doing. And it just became really important to me that, even as a nurse, never alone as a woman, that should anything happen to him, I can get a tractor and lift something off him. So I made him teach me over the successive year how to drive everything, how to operate everything, and how to be part of what farming is all about, because it's so easy to go and buy a leg of lamb off the shelf in a supermarket. There's no thought as to how it got there.
No, that's and that's a really wonderful initiative that you took, because I can completely relate, and it's amazing how often I've had this conversation with people, which is something you don't automatically think about when you move to rural areas, as you've just explained. So I do want to move on a little bit to where we are with the AgriFutures grant. So, you know, learning farming, and that's obviously become a big part of your life. What's the next step? What was the next step there?
Suddenly realised you only get an income once a year. So we got married, and then 2 years after we got married, he said, if you're not going to come and live in the farm, why did we get married? So I worked out that I wanted an income. I didn't need it. I wanted an income. So our family and friends started saying, oh, what are we doing with our out-of-spec lambs? Can we, you know, not only are we eating them, but our family are loving them. Why don't I sell them? So my husband's last name is Bullen, and at school he was called Bully or Mad Dog. So wow. Bully's Meats was made from that. So I founded that in 2012. And at the same time I did my export qualifications, found a buyer in China and started exporting box beef into China, Hong Kong, Oman and Singapore. So the lamb business became the regular income, and that's what I wanted. At that stage, it was spasmodic, but that was okay. It was enough for me to cover the bills. It gave us a bit of an income, and it gave, you know, some breathing space to the farm so that it wasn't such a, for my husband as a solo worker and me, it wasn't such an intense, this is what we have to do when, where and how. It became a more planned for me and diversion of the business so that succession was sort of started to become purely because it was an easy transition to do all of this. And part of Bully's Meat from day one was to make sure that I could provide food for somebody who needed it. And they didn't have to know me, or they did know me, and I created a Facebook page, but mainly word of mouth, and I'd say to people, you know, do you know somebody who needs food?
So you're talking about, you know, you're selling lamb, but there was a social enterprise sort of bit onto the side where you were supplying free food to someone in need.
Mm-hmm. And we went to the Big Issue Big Lunch 1 year, which was the charity that supports the Big Issue and puts women in work, and we were served the very ordinary meat at the time, and my husband turned to me and said, we can do better. So then we became their major meat or protein supplier from that point till it stopped because of COVID. So we would be feeding 400 paying guests, and I know that that helped raise close to, you know, $500,000, and that would put train women in domestic violence situations to get into full-time work. So those sorts of things were the same value as my husband.
Wow.
So in 2017, we stopped exporting because that was the first ban from China. And we just diversified the business again so that our cattle are now either sold direct to feedlots or sold as part of meat in our meat packages. And I met Jessica from Carry to Country because we were doing our fellowship. We're fellows of the Governor's Leadership Foundation here in South Australia, so we were doing that leadership course together.
Okay, just to clarify there, Carry to Country, could you just explain exactly what that is?
Carry to Country is an Aboriginal word, carry meaning food from animals. In 2017, I met Jess. In 2018, that business was founded. She had to go on country, which was out in Alice Springs, and had to do sorry business, and when she got there, she had a good paying job, her and her family here in South Australia, they realised they couldn't afford food, and they were looking at $70 for 500 grams of minced meat.
Oh my goodness.
And $86 for 4 loin lamb chops.
Is that because of transport issues to Alice Springs, or why is that so massive?
We don't know.
That's extraordinary.
That's the prices they're selling into the community stores around communities in, South Australia, Northern Territory.
Mm-hmm. Is that still the case?
Yep.
Right. So you and Jessica identified this, and how did that relationship build on from there? What are you doing together?
Well, she rang, said, and I said, right, that's the problem. Now here's, but let's get the solution. So I can get 4 kilos of mincemeat into, delivered, and everybody's paid into the Northern Territory for the same cost of $70. So right. They, the Territory Country is the first Aboriginal-owned meat distribution company. And so Bully's Meat, they purchase the meat from Bully's Meat, and I have got a processor, butcher, and freight company that are all working to keep their prices as low as we possibly can to get meat into the Northern Territory and out onto community.
So with your business now, because you've just rattled off quite a few different ways that you're selling your beef and lamb or meat products, have you changed the whole way that your business operates to account for projects like this, to the Territory Country? No, you've still, so you've just increased your herd and flock numbers, or this is, you've just been able to do it all?
We have, our herd and flock numbers were the same. So prior to this, we were doing 30 lambs a week into Adelaide and surrounds. And that is our limit, because that's our butcher's capacity. Because some weeks it might be 15, some weeks it might be not. We are able to supply into the Northern Territory. And right up until literally me winning this award, the deliveries into the Northern Territory have been spasmodic. So we probably did 25 from 2018 till this year, because they shut the communities because of COVID. Mm. So getting out onto communities and doing all of that stuff has been problematic, purely because COVID. But then COVID was actually good, because during that time as well, because we were able to work with the Northern Territory government and get centre pay so that they can actually pick a meat pack and do like a lay-by. So I don't make them wait to the end of that lay-by. I send it halfway through, because people have to eat.
Yeah.
And we the money comes regardless, so we're actually able to increase. So when I won the award, the first thing I did was get the cool trailer, get it branded, and then get it transported out of Victoria out into Northern Territory. And so we've done nearly 1,000 deliveries in it since it's been on the road.
Oh, my goodness. So that's – so my
sorry,
next 100. Question.
Sorry, 100. Oh, wow. Yeah, whoa. Sorry.
I was going to say, that's a lot of miles, Robin.
Yeah, correct myself.
I did want to ask you, because part of being a finalist is the $15,000 from Westpac. Is that correct? So is that what you used your grant money for?
That is what I used more than half of it for, yes. Because the freight to get the cool trailer and everything was unbelievable.
Mm. No, I can appreciate that. So what else are you using that grant for? How is it going to help you continue on to your goals?
It's currently also being used to create a website to increase the profile of both businesses, so that we can get more producers involved, get more processes involved, and increase the deliveries into the Northern Territory, South Australia, and out on communities. Because while all this is going on, Bully's Meats is still doing what we do best in South Australia and surrounds. So I haven't stopped supplying meat for anybody that asks for it. Mm. I have, as part of our program, part of our business, all of my clients know I have a pay it forward section. So if they don't want meat and they feel they have got money to give, they can donate to my business or pay into my business any money, and we will match that dollar donation and then put the meat towards that to anybody that needs meat. So that still goes on.
When you think about communities around Alice Springs, Adelaide and surrounds, and South Australia, southeast South Australia where you are, that's an enormous distance. Like to get to coordinate that and meet the cost that you have, that must be a nightmare.
It's come to the stage where I'm actually looking to put somebody on in the business to help me run that side of it. Logistics is easy because the logistics companies, they all know what they're doing. And so, but it is the coordination of being in two different states and having Jess and Jordan, her brother, in Alice Springs that are doing it all there, because they can go out onto community. That's the other thing. They are Aboriginal by birth, so they're welcome out on community. So it makes it easier because they just can hook the trailer up and off they go. And this is the first time in some of the communities that they've been able to get cold, fresh meat.
That's amazing. What is that? You know, it's a bit of a warm, fuzzy question, but what does that mean to you to be able to provide that kind of service, basic service to some of these communities?
It fills my cup. There was a time when I did a call out in Adelaide, in CBD of Adelaide, at one Christmas, because we had a couple of hundred of those lambs running around, and we just wanted to give some away and move some quickly. And I was put in contact with a lady, and I went to her place, packaged up a half a side of lamb, and she said to me, "Is that their food?" I had no idea what that meant until I opened her freezer, and there was absolutely nothing in it. And to this day, that sits with me, and it doesn't sit comfortably with me. So I want to try and put food in as many empty freezers as I possibly can for as long as I can, with a whole lot of people working with me to do that. So that's where I come from. And I come from the point of view that I had that empty freezer. So it wasn't till I actually saw it in somebody else that I realised that our problem is, why are there empty freezers, and how can I come up with a solution to change at least some of that?
Well, it's really powerful, Robin. I have to say that's a really remarkable story that you have. And when, you know, to follow on from that, you've just touched on what motivates you and what you want to do in terms of filling empty freezers. But in terms of Bully's Beef and achieving that, what's your next goal? Like, what are you aiming towards?
My next goal is to set up a not-for-profit so that we can give donations, we can accept and change a whole lot of different access grants and things like that. I want to be able to train. I've got butchers that are really keen to work with anybody that wants to work with them. And our meat, I know our meat is great. It's the best meat going, but I'm not going to say anything else. but there are First Nations ingredients going into sausage making and meatballs and things like that that they're already eating. I want to be able to see if we can get some training and get those products out into shelves so First Nations people are actually earning an income and the profits are going back to the community, not on to anybody else.
So training, so on selling your product. Is that what you mean?
Yep. So they're actually selling their meat rubs and their ingredients to make these products. That's my goal going forward, to be able to offer anybody an option, an opportunity to do that. And I have memorandums of understanding with one of the big supermarket chains here that they will teach anybody that wants to listen how to price products and get them on the shelves, and just to grow that whole food bowl that currently the money is not being sent back to First Nations communities. It's actually, a lot of it is taken out and taken by a distributor and things like that. I don't want to be a distributor. I want to be the person that says, look, it's okay, you can do that. I'm just going to put you in front of the people that can help you. One of the other things that I've been working on is getting an abattoir up and running here in South Australia that will do contract kills and things like that. And part of that has been some proprietary rights to produce collagen. Now, collagen comes from the hides of animals, and all the collagen products in Australia, most of that comes from Argentina.
Really?
So we want, and we, if we can actually sell collagen for more than meat, so we want to give the, that pricing back to the farmers, and in order, in doing that, we'll be able to supply more meat into more communities and food insecure people than ever.
Wow. Right. Well, you certainly have a big whiteboard in front of you, don't you, with your list of goals. When you're talking about arbitrage and those kind of contracts, so that's you know, supply becomes an issue. When you're thinking about expanding that to some and scaling it, would you consider taking on other producers? Have you talked to other producers?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I talk to other producers all the time. I talk to them now because when we don't have stock, I still need to supply. So, and I see every farmer out there as somebody I should be collaborating with, not competing with.
Nice.
Because there are farms that can't sell their animals, and I don't know if people understand, if your animal goes over specifications, you actually get penalised with money rather than get paid more if it weighs more. So I want those out-of-spec animals because I can give them a price per kilo, and I can then on-sell it as part of Bullies Meats and Kerry to Country. So everybody has the transaction, it goes straight back to the producer, and everybody along the supply chain gets what they need to be able to provide this food into people's homes.
Amazing. My final question, you know, you went on that form letter date with Chris all that time ago and, you know, seems to have really made an impact on his farming business. How does he feel about all of this? Is he very much on board with everything you're doing, and or is he being sort of a little bit sceptical as to the rate of change here?
No, I married a man who was ready for change. He is my greatest supporter, my best friend, and my biggest critic. So
husband's great.
yes. And sometimes I don't actually like to even see him, but that's fairly normal.
maybe term it as constructive feedback.
Oh, that is constructive feedback.
So we
were actually talking about this last night, and he just said he couldn't be prouder of where we've taken the farm and how at any stage I need him to stand beside me or behind me. I just need to let him know because he will be there.
Are you okay?
Sorry.
You okay?
Yep.
Look, I really appreciate how honest and candid you've been in this interview. I really enjoyed this chat. So, Robin, all the best in the next round of interviews, and you've just achieved so much. So, congratulations!
Thank you so much.
No worries. We were just listening to Robin Verrall, the South Australian winner of the AgriFutures Australia Rural Women's Award. She's one of seven national finalists in the award, and online applications for the 2023 AgriFutures Rural Women's Award open on Wednesday, 7th of September, 2022. Thanks for listening. I'm Jane Cudahy.
You've been listening to AgriFutures On Air, a podcast brought to you by AgriFutures Australia. For full access to a huge backlog of stories on Australia's agricultural trends and innovations, research outcomes, inspiring stories from our rural leaders, and insights into new and emerging rural industries, please subscribe to AgriFutures On Air on your favourite podcasting app. You can also find more information at our website, agrifutures.com.au.